Hello and welcome to SourceCast episode number 19. I'm your host, Joey Lombardi. This week we're going to discuss IBM's job eliminations again. There's more analysis, there's more commentary, and there's a little bit more information about what's going on over at IBM. So we're going to deep dive on it. We're also going to discuss a little bit of competition that EMC may be facing in their own backyard. We're also going to have a little bit of fun with Hewlett-Packard Enterprise CEO Meg Whitman. She made a lot of interesting comments this week, and we're going to talk about them. So why wait? Let's start the show. Our lead story this week is the IBM job eliminations. Over the last 2 weeks on the blog and the podcast, we discussed that IBM could potentially cut up to a third of their workforce. Reports are coming out now that the job eliminations are expected to be around 14,000 workers globally. So how did we get to this number of 14,000? Everyone is reporting different numbers. Information Week has done a little bit of detective work. They are stating that historically, it costs $70,000 to eliminate an employee at IBM. IBM also received a windfall via a $1 billion tax settlement with the Japanese government. Information Week learned that IBM received guidance to include the $1 billion Japanese tax authority settlement to assist with the layoff payments. So their guesstimate is a result of taking the $1 billion tax settlement by the Japanese tax authority and dividing it by $70,000. And that's how you get to the 14,000 employee number. I'm not sure if I believe that methodology. That number sounds like fuzzy math to me. But we do know that there's a substantial job elimination effort going on at IBM right now. Another aspect of that job elimination is where the jobs are going. IBM is not calling the job eliminations. They're calling it a workforce rebalancing. And we're going to get back to that a little bit later. But there are several critics and former employees that are stating that this is not a rebalancing. This is an effort to move U.S. jobs offshore to India, Brazil, Costa Rica, and other countries with cheaper labor costs. And this is where I think both of those things are happening. I think you have a situation where IBM is attempting to get cheaper labor in the areas where they are eliminating the jobs, to maintain those areas and those businesses while they're transitioning. But I also actually believe IBM when they're talking about a workforce rebalancing. And this is strictly my opinion. When you're looking at what IBM is trying to do and how they're trying to transform their company, and I say this almost every week, they're focused on analytics. They're focused on AI and Watson. They're focused on the healthcare market, and they're focused on security. So it's analytics, it's data, it's artificial intelligence, and it's security. And cloud. Don't want to forget the cloud. That's an important part of what I'm about to say. All of these large companies are moving towards a box service. What do I mean by box service? It's software that's ready to go. It's sitting on a cloud. It's already configured. You literally get a login or a subscription-based service, and you're rocking and rolling. That's where their future is. We're not there yet, and it may take several years to get there, but their end goal and their vision of the future is you call the company, they're going to give you a login ID for your organization or several login IDs, and you're just going to go start doing on their tools and platforms. There's no installation in your own infrastructure. So if you're trying to build a future that looks like that, do you need a massive consulting department? I don't think that you do. I think you need marketing, and that's why they've bought 4 marketing companies last month. IBM wants to come in and sell you a pre-established and pre-made platform. They clearly want to get away from consulting because they're not making money at it and they're getting their rear ends kicked by Accenture and a lot of the Indian consulting firms. So they're trying to build a completely different business model where you can sell IT to a company and the strength of selling that IT is that you don't need to configure it that much. We know from history that IBM is not afraid to cannibalize their old businesses. They sold off their desktops, they sold off pieces of their server markets, and they're going to continue to sell off or strip down pieces of their business that they find to be archaic and not aligned to their new business strategy. So this is not a defense of IBM, because I don't know if the strategy is going to work, but it is in line with the strategy that they are trying to present. Which is interesting, because once again, Seeking Alpha, they recently published an article that said, all is lost at IBM, and they are citing the job eliminations. The key takeaway from that article was, a good technology company doesn't treat people as disposable parts. Fair point. Speaking of those people, Salesforce CEO Mark Benioff reached out to those IBM employees that have been job eliminated and is urging them to join the Salesforce team. He sent out a Twitter note that said, Salesforce opens its hands to help IBM and any laid off workers. Send us your resumes. My thought is that a sincere sentiment by Mark Benioff or is it just a marketing ploy? A very smart marketing ploy. I guess we'll see. So to summarize, IBM is in the process of laying off thousands of employees. That's not a good sign for the company. But the areas that they are doing the layoffs, which is generally consulting and global services, are areas where IBM is reducing and not winning business, and that's not strategically focused in the areas where they're growing their business. Is that a bad sign for the company, or is that a smart business decision? And while we talk about IBM eliminating jobs at their own offices, they're trying to help Hilton do the same thing. I'm making a joke. It makes for a better transition into the next segment. I really don't think this is about job eliminations. Hilton is introducing a robotic concierge named Connie that is analytically powered by Watson. So what does this thing do? Well, it's a gimmick, but it's basically a toy that I guess you can put in your room and talk to it, and it'll help you check out and do things at the hotel. For those of you familiar with Amazon's Echo platform, I'm guessing it's exactly the same thing, but jammed into a toy robot. Shifting over to any company that's not IBM, let's talk about Dell and EMC. It sounds like Dell is close to selling off Perot Systems to NTT. Dell expected to get about $5 billion, but the rumor on the street is that the payout's going to be around $3.52 billion. So they're taking a 30% hit. Dell needs cash, so that's not necessarily good news for them. I guess it's positive that they sold the company and that they are getting some money. They need a lot more. And speaking of bad news, there's a new player in the storage market, and they are nipping at EMC's heels. And it's personal, because the founder of this company, named Infinidat, is Moshe Yanai. Moshe, and if I'm saying that name right, was a major player at EMC, starting in 1987-ish. He developed a lot of critical tools in the Cimetrix area. He left EMC in 2001, went to Israel, started a new company with a bunch of colleagues. Guess what? It's called Infinidat now. And they're not in Israel anymore. This week, they announced a global expansion. They are quadrupling in size. They're setting up offices all over the world, and they're basing their headquarters in what state? Massachusetts, the same state that EMC is based in. But if a competitor sets up shop in your backyard, I would probably view that as a sign of aggression. We want the gold, sucker! Hulk Hogan, we got it for you! EMC's got a lot on their plate right now. They're getting bought out. They got a former colleague nipping at their heels. All I can say is, good luck. And before I get off of EMC, let's talk about what Meg Whitman, who is Hewlett Packard Enterprise's CEO, had to say about them. She's been saying a lot of interesting things this week. When asked about Dell's acquisition of EMC, she took the opportunity to take a shot at the companies. And I quote, "We have very different strategies in this environment, no question. And we've decided to get smaller while they have gotten bigger. We decided to lean into new technologies while they've doubled down on old technologies in a cost takeout play. They've levered up while we've delevered, and we are super focused on being fast and nimble for our customers. So both strategies may work, but I happen to like our hand better than the Dell EMC brand." This is not the first time that Meg has taken shots at this merger, and there's an article from IT Business Edge that kind of addresses that. Not to sound like a broken record, but I quote, "Much of what Whitman says lacks anything solid behind it, making it clear that she's got the political promise thing down. But at some point, it might be nice to see one of those amazing innovations supposedly coming out of the company. Dell won't be able to adequately defend against the HP attacks until the deal is settled. Till it has more than one marginally good quarter under its belt, it might be wise to hold back a bit on the rocks." During Meg's press tour, she also managed to make some comments about millennials. I figure some of my younger listeners might appreciate this comment. And by appreciate, I mean not appreciate at all. The headline is, "Why Meg Whitman Relies on Entitled 22-Year-Olds for Advice." And I quote, Whitman says, "Entitled is too strong of a word," glad she's backing off of that, "to define new graduates. But even that isn't so bad. In fact, the impatience of today's youth is useful at a $50 billion sales corporation like Hewlett Packard Enterprise. They refuse to work on things that do not matter. Meg frequently receives emails from young hires complaining about the projects that they are working on because they're not going anywhere. You would be surprised how many projects we have killed because a 22-year-old says, that's stupid. And it's also a little annoying, honestly." I try to keep the majority of the personal commentary that runs in my head out of these podcasts. But you have a CEO that's coming up with ideas, and then you have a group of 22-year-old recent hires at the bottom of that chain. Where are all the people in the middle? Where are all these bad ideas coming from that a 22-year-old needs to tell you that they're useless and not worth exploring? So either HP is dramatically in need of mid-level management with proper insights, or that comment is just pandering to a youthful workforce that she's hoping to attract. Good luck, Meg. We're going to shift over to some news that you can use. I saw an article from Spend Matters that I wanted to share. I spend so much time on this podcast talking about companies that are being merged or bought out or acquired that I always think it's interesting when there are articles talking about how the organizations merge and how to be efficient at those efforts. An article from Spend Matters provides a beginner's guide to post-merger integration sourcing. They suggest taking a phased approach, starting with indirect initiatives that can yield quick wins. The requirements in the space tend to be similar across companies, and they involve fewer constraints. Consolidations, validating the price of whatever widgets you guys are buying, and seeing who has superior prices, etc., etc. Basically looking at better opportunities from increased volume and pricing. These indirect categories typically provide shorter time to realization, which satisfies all the new leads and old leads. The article suggests that categories like professional services, travel, IT, and telecom should be the first priorities to look at. And we'll talk about one last article before we close it out this week. And it's another Fast Company article, which I think is like the McDonald's of business news. But that's 3 weeks in a row I'm doing a Fast Company article. Sorry. It's a good conversation piece. How do you advance in your career without becoming a workaholic? We've touched on this before. We've talked about volunteering for projects, taking on things that stretch out your experience levels, that expose you to new people and to new experiences to help develop your skills. But does that mean that you have to say yes to every project? Of course not. Successful professionals often fear saying no or not being seen as a team player. But Fast Company says that the key to getting ahead is actually setting boundaries and being strategic about the things that you invest your time in. This all makes perfect sense. If you're new to a job, or if you're new to working in a professional environment, but you will hit a certain point where you have a certain subset of experiences and skills that are more than sufficient for the current job that you're in. So how do you transcend to the next level? Do you keep working harder? Do you keep pushing? Do you keep volunteering? The quote is that overachievers who live at the office tend to burn out fast and often neglect doing the very things they need to do in order to advance. So what are the very things that you need to do to advance? The article talks about becoming engaged, you working smarter and not longer, raising your hand, volunteering, which we've discussed. But then it says, focus on relationships. Now, focusing on relationships doesn't necessarily mean the people at the top. It's about understanding how the business operates. And this is me paraphrasing, and this is me offering my own advice. You work for a company. There are several departments that are operating. Theoretically, those departments are operating to achieve the same goal ultimately. Understanding how those groups function, what their needs are, and what their issues are, is going to make you a better employee. There's a tendency to look for the sweet spot, the low-hanging fruit. But if you're at a good company, the low-hanging fruit should have been picked already. In my personal advice, you got to look for the trouble areas, the things that just don't get fixed. Try to understand why that isn't working. And you might not be able to fix it, but you're going to learn a lot. So I'll leave you with that. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back with episode number 20 next week. Take care.